When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Same Old Arsenal podcast, coming to you live straight after the full-time whistle at Bramall Lane. Sheffield United 0, Arsenal 6. I'm joined by the wonderful Mervyn to talk this one through. And Merv, it's interesting when you go on Twitter post-game and you've got people complaining that we've only scored 6, isn't it? tells you a lot about how well tonight went.
Indeed. Well, it is the same old Arsenal. It's kind of this is the same old Arsenal 2024 style.
Absolutely. And I mean, what a start to the year it's been. Absolutely phenomenal. 30 goals since the turn of the year. I mean, we've scored an obscene amount of goals. The first team in the top four leagues in English football to score plus 5 goals in 3 consecutive away games. This team is just developing game upon game upon game. And tonight, I think there were a few nerves going into the match. There were a couple of people that, you know, would have taken a scrappy 1-0 win. I probably would have been one of them, to be quite honest with you, after the results that came at the weekend with City winning, Liverpool winning. I mean, even, you know, Villa winning, Spurs winning. There was an onus on Arsenal today to get the job done, but game was over in 15 minutes, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I mean, it was kind of... It's almost expected. I mean, I was lucky enough to be at West Ham. And it was just that was one of those experiences where it just kind of, there was nothing to worry about. You just knew goals were going to come one after the other. It just felt that way. And I mean, pretty much, you know, without kind of like getting too carried away, it's felt that way ever since. I mean, it's felt that way since Crystal Palace game. I mean, I wasn't... You know, the fact that we started at high tempo and could have scored twice before we did score after 5 minutes was like, it was just continuing from kind of last week. It was kind of, it's we seem to be at the moment keeping a certain level going in terms of performance, in terms of starting games. We used to start games very slowly, passing it around, getting a feel of the ball, but we're straight into the attack now.
Absolutely. And how impressive is it that we're able to start games quite literally like a house on fire? I mean, like you say, in years gone by, in months gone by, we've seen Arsenal kind of canter into victory, but we're starting games almost exactly where we're leaving them. We're going right into them, and those patterns of play, those bits of chemistry between the players, it's there. You know, they don't need 10, 15 minutes to suss the opposition out. They just go out there, play their football, and before you know it, the ball's in the back of the net. And when you look at, say, City yesterday against Manchester United, and okay, they were very impressive, deserved to win that game, but it took them a while to get up to speed. It wasn't until the second half that Phil Foden got the equalising goal before they inevitably went on to win the match. But we're scoring goals so early on in games. We're putting them to bed so early. I mean, I think it's a very unique ability, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's easy to get carried away because it's been about 4, 5, 6 games now to think, oh, this is it. We're going to do this every week. But it feels like at the very start of a game, we're just knocking it about so quickly and so passing it around the opposition. It's kind of, we're in the stride almost immediately. It's almost like they've had a practice a few minutes before at doing this and they're just doing it for real. So it's a great place to be. And clearly since they had that break in Dubai, something with the collective team has happened because everybody seems on the same wavelengths. Everybody seems aligned with each other. Everybody knows where everybody's going to be. It's almost like they don't have to think about the passes. It's kind of, they know that if they knock it there, someone's going to be there. Someone's going to knock it back and across. And it's just, yeah, metronomic. It's kind of like, it's so good to watch that it's almost easy to take it for granted.
Absolutely. And you referenced that Dubai trip there. I mean, it wasn't too long before that we had a pretty bleak period in this season, losing to West Ham at home, losing to Fulham away in what was comfortably our worst performance of the season, then getting knocked out of the FA Cup by Liverpool in what was not a bad performance, but still it didn't add to the morale around the team, could you say?
Yeah.
Gone to Dubai, come back, and all of those things that you mentioned there, synergy, chemistry, understanding between the players, I don't want to say it's as simple as a flick of the switch, but it almost does feel that way. I know against Crystal Palace, we scored a couple of goals from set pieces and people were still umming and ahhing about whether we were ruthless enough going forward. But since then, six against West Ham, five against Burnley, six again today, not to mention the wins against Liverpool, Nottingham Forest.
Newcastle,
yeah. I mean, what has changed?
Liverpool's obviously slightly different, but in terms of the fours, the fives and sixes, we're putting the marker down early. I mean, we're getting 2-3 goals under our belt relatively early in games. Even the Newcastle game, albeit it was into the second half, but it's still, you know, playing another one of the top few teams. It's rare to be that far ahead so early in the game. So it's just, and I think with starting with the Palace game, I suppose, you know, just being able to score and then not sit back and control the game, just score again and again. And then kind of, there's no real let up because some of the passing patterns are just so easy on the eye, so comfortable. It's like I said earlier, it's like everybody knows where everybody else is going to be all the time. And they know there's going to be someone there.
Do you think it helps that we've now got something of a settled 11? I know that there's players that are coming in and out of the team, but very rarely do you see Arsenal making more than one change to the starting 11. I mean, we more or no less. Now, the backline goalkeeper is what it is. That's not changing. Midfield, we pretty much know what that is at the minute. And up top, I mean, it's quite nice to have the option of someone like Trossard, Jesus, or even Havertz leading the line. But then you know who your wingers are, Martinelli and Bukayo Saka. Because we've now got that settled 11, do you think that's playing into this idea that the synergy, the chemistry has gone up between the group?
I think so. I think it's, you know, one of those, you know, if you think back to great, great Arsenal teams, you know, of the past, you can name the first 11. You know, you can, you know who it's going to be. And we're kind of at that place at the moment on this run for the last few weeks where we kind of know what it's going to be. And as players come back from injury, they I'm sure Thomas Partey will begin to play. He'll be coming off the bench for the next couple of games, but we might begin to rotate a bit more, particularly, you know, fingers crossed, we can continue this against Porto, of course, Wednesday week. But the you know, we will need to rotate. I don't know about Gabby Martinelli going off tonight. I don't know if he's hurt. I hope we'll get into that. It's a great place to be at the moment. We need to enjoy it. Half our effing team did. I can see the comments coming up already. It's not going to be that way all through to the end of the season, obviously. And we've got quite a few difficult away games on the run in as opposed to home games. But it's just good to have this groove. It's just like a groove they're in at the moment.
Absolutely. And I don't think we should take it for granted, because you do reference there that we do have some very tough away games. We have to go to White Hart Lane. We have to go to Old Trafford. And we all know that the game at the Etihad is looming. Not to mention, we've got to go to places like Brighton, like Wolves, teams that have been doing quite well this season. Teams I think we can have the beating of, given how well we're playing. Yeah. But by no means easy games to go to. So I don't think it's going to be cut and dry. I don't think it's going to be as simple as it has been these past couple of games. And there's an interesting comment here from Matthew D'Souza. Thank you for your comment, mate. And please do get your comments in. We'll be sure to answer those throughout the course of the show. Not sure all of our problems have been solved. Teams we've played have not posed the problems that West Ham United at home did, Porto did, and we lost. I think that's a really interesting comment, because I remember when we did lose to West Ham, and I don't think we were necessarily poor that night. I just remember West Ham were incredibly resilient, defended excellently, and we just looked pretty toothless going forward. The Porto game was kind of reminiscent of that in a way, and it is worrying that we saw that type of performance clustered in amongst these games where we're pushing teams aside. Do you think there is something to be said for the fact that we have played teams that have been very poor? West Ham away, very bad. Burnley away, not as bad, but still very bad. Sheffield United, I think, were the worst of the bunch. They were dreadful tonight. And Newcastle at home, I thought, were very poor as well.
They were. I mean, we can't deny that we've had a run of games where we've played either weaker teams or we've played teams who, for different reasons, have not been at their best. But then we've set the pace from the start. So in a game like tonight, Sheffield United, I'm sure, would have been up for it, shall we say, in the old vernacular. But we just kind of, controlled the game from kickoff. And we did very much at West Ham, pretty much did against Newcastle. So, I mean, it was, we are exercising that level of control. But of course, it's not, we can't assume it's going to be like that every week. I'm sure Thomas Frank would have been watching tonight and is already working out a game plan and stuff for the Saturday. So it's kind of whether or not we've got that confidence to just go out the way that, I suppose, for those, I won't say older, for those more mature listeners, watchers, viewers, you think back to Liverpool in the 70s and 80s and you know, when I was younger, those kind of teams you always knew were just going to go out and impose themselves on the opposition week in, week out. If we can begin to get that level of confidence and that level of almost swagger in the way we play and the passes, as I say, metronomic almost, everybody knows where everyone's going to be. And that's worked on. That's hard work on the training ground and everything. To be able to do that, even, it's the Premier League. So, I mean, yes, we have had a run of games against teams who aren't obviously in the top six. But, it's still not easy to do. Sheffield United have still got points this season. West Ham were six a few weeks ago. It was kind of, so it's not, Newcastle are in the top six or seven. So, along the way, we have been doing against teams who have been playing well this season. But I think it's about going out and imposing ourselves, and we won't do it every game. But at the moment, I think we're on a run where we seem to be able to do it and score that really early goal.
Yep, and it's coming at just the right time as well. I mean, to turn our fortunes around at such a pivotal point in the season with so many players coming back from injury. I mean, all the stars very nearly seem to be aligning for Arsenal. It's all looking very, very rosy in the minute. Let's go back to the very beginning of tonight's game. It was an unchanged lineup from what we saw against Newcastle. Zero problems for me. I was really pleased to see that team starting again. Most importantly, really pleased to see Jorginho starting again, because I think this is another game where we could have potentially done something similar to what we did against Nottingham Forest away at the City Grounds, where we played Emile Smith Rowe in that left eight role. I also wouldn't have had any issue with that whatsoever, because I want to see players like him, like Fabio Vieira, getting more minutes. But Jorginho was so good against Newcastle, I think he had to start this game. And it's funny that you look at a midfield of Jorginho and Declan Rice, and I think 3-4 months ago, a lot of our supporters would have looked at that midfield and gone, oh, why are we playing those two away from home against Sheffield United? It's far too defensive-minded. I really think that from an attacking point of view, those two offer so much to us going forward. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would. It's about control. And we're learning about controlling games. The ebb and flow of games. You might have rightly said that a few weeks ago, people might have said it's a bit of a defensive lineup considering we're playing the bottom team. But, whether you're playing Man City or whether you're playing team at the bottom, you've got to take control of the game or try to take control of the game. And we found a way to do that. We've got experienced players who never waste a pass, never seem to waste a pass, who know where each other is, know how to find space, pass and move. All the time, just get the feel of the ball. There's lots of passes where it goes from here to here, back to here, but over there, back to there. But that's great, because while you're doing that, the opposition running around They're not getting control of the ball. They're getting frustrated. And it is a level of control we're not used to us, maybe, since the Invincible days almost. It's a level of control we're not used to us having.
Yeah, and the perfect person to talk about the Invincibles has just arrived. Amanda, oh, good to have you on. How was it for you this evening?
The same as it was for all of you. Well, it was great. And hello, everybody. Sorry, I'm only here for 10 minutes. I feel like I'm losing my voice as well. Hi, Merv. Hi, Cookie.
Hi, Amanda.
Hello, hello. It's great, isn't it? I don't remember a time like it. I just don't. And I was quite apprehensive today because I thought this, not that it could be a banana skin. I did predict 2-1 we'd win. But I just wasn't like everybody else on social media. 4-5, 6-0. I was thinking, are you mad? We just can't keep doing this. And yet here we are, keep doing it. You know, it's just phenomenal. And yes, we will get thrown. It's only Sheffield United. You know, it's going to happen. But we've beaten Liverpool. We've beaten Newcastle. We won away at Forest. I don't really care what anyone says. Jamie Carragher, all he could say tonight was how poor Sheffield United were. Well, you know what? We're challenging for the league with his team. So you have to sort of understand it. It's not his fault Sky keep employing him, but he's as biased as you know what. So, yeah. But no, I agree with what Mervyn was saying. I can't remember a time like this, but we did say a few, well, no, 4 or 5 weeks ago, they've all come to form in the right time. Please, yeah. God, Martinelli's okay, because that didn't look very nice. Hopefully just a kick and, you know, be back, Brentford or maybe Porto. But this is what you pay for, Cookie. This is what you support your team for. And I would like to say something. I've never seen a ground where fans leave on 14 minutes. I can honestly say I've watched football since BC and I can't ever remember that. Half time, maybe, but 14 minutes, you would just stay and support your team because, you know, Arsenal in a rich vein of form. Yet, you know, and Sheffield United are poor. There's no denying that, but you got to stay and support your team.
Yeah, Merv, it's a good point Amanda makes there about fans leaving on 14 minutes. And I don't know if you saw the clip of the blind Sheffield United supporter leaving around a similar time as well, but it kind of summed up how things were going for Sheffield United at that point in the game. I mean, it's telling from an opposition fan's point of view, and this sounds horribly arrogant, and there's nothing I hate more than arrogance, but it tells you a lot about how this Arsenal team is perceived, that at that point in the game, they kind of feel like it's game over, that they don't believe that they're able to get back into the game. And in seasons gone by, you know, we've all endured the 4-4 at St James's Park. We've seen games where we've gone to places like this, where we've gone to Bournemouth, we've gone to Stoke, we've gone to West Brom and wilted and just been bullied and rolled over against teams that we should be having the beating of. It's not the case with this Arsenal team, is it?
No. Well, at the moment, you know, we have to say, let's not get carried away too much. But yes, at the moment, they're not being bullied. They're controlling games. You know, we're part of a top three who I think are much stronger than the rest of the league. And obviously, I hope we can prevail. But there's definitely a gulf there, as you can see. I mean, already there's a gap opening up between the top three and the rest. And I think, you know, we've earned our place to be there. It's not like we're there. It's not like we're lucky to be there. It's like we, you know, we're winning games, and we're winning games comfortably. We're winning games well. You know, we've beaten both Liverpool and City already this season. It's a great. Yeah, enjoy it. You know, there are plenty of seasons, as you say, that you know, we would have killed for this kind of feeling. And I have to say, for the slightly more mature viewers, listeners, watchers, 37 years ago tonight, I don't know if you were there, Amanda, at Shite Hart Lane 37 years ago tonight, but of course it was the League Cup semi-final replay.
Well, now, funny you should say that. I wasn't, yes. Because I was at the first leg. My dad had 2 tickets and he couldn't go to the first leg. He was at a function. I ended up going. And I'll never forget what they did at halftime, Tottenham, when they announced how to get your Wembley, was it final or semi-final, whatever it was, final tickets.
Yeah, final. And I they announced when they were going on sale. Yeah.
And a lot of people around me heard it. And I remember this. I remember looking at my cousin, because I was a stroppy teenager then, going, what the fuck are they playing at? How dare they assume? I'll never. I was like, do you know what we need? I hope they've played that in the dressing room. I was like going livid. People around me going, what have you heard? I said, they've just announced how to get final tickets. I was like, has no one heard this? And I'll never forget. And obviously then, I then couldn't go to the second leg. My dad was there, and it was incredible. The fact that we took it to the second leg when they did that at halftime, I would never forgive Arsenal for doing that, ever. It was like, I know you're all going to laugh at me, but my Scouse mates will now never sing You Never Walk Alone until the match is over, because they sung it in 1989 with a couple of minutes to go.
They
were singing it thinking they've won the league, and they said they will never, ever do that again because they thought they'd won it. And I think it's things like that that you just, you know, spurs people on. Excuse the pun.
Yeah, 37
years ago tonight was the most incredible feeling to beat them at Shite Hart Lane and go on to the final.
Yeah. No, it was. It was. And again, that was a team where, you know, everybody played for each other, and you just knew, kind of, everybody knew their role, everybody knew what they had to do, and everybody did it. But this is what's developing at the moment. Again, I don't want to get too carried away, but we've had some big wins, obviously. I never thought, you know, I don't get to that many away games, probably five or six a season. But yeah, I didn't think I'd get to a game like the West Ham game the other week. You know, I've not seen us win a Premier League game away like that. And I think that there is an expectation now. I think we're feeling it. We're expecting it every game, which obviously, you know, somebody random will bring us down to earth, I'm sure.
Please don't say that, Murph. Please don't say that.
Well, only once, only for the one-off. But yeah, it would be great if we can maintain this level of consistency. I mean, obviously not scoring 5-6 every game, but I mean, a level of consistency of control of games over the next 2 or 3 months.
Absolutely. And Amanda, I'll come to you before, because I know you've got to shoot off at some point, but Saka in those opening phases of the game just was unbelievable, wasn't he? I mean, I spoke not so long about how influential Jorginho was. I mean, as was Martin Ødegaard, as was Kai Havertz. I mean, basically everyone across that front six, and even the back four was fantastic. But Saka in particular, Sheffield United lined up with a back four. They had to change that plan because Saka was causing former Arsenal man Austin Trusty so many problems. 3 goals in the opening 15 minutes. I mean, he certainly played a role in us scoring those goals so early on. I mean, is there a case to be made for him being arguably the best right winger in Europe at the minute?
Incredible. Tonight, one of those goals that he set up, I think it was Havertz, I've lost, honestly, count. Could have been Martinelli. His footwork was incredible. I think it was the Havertz goal. I literally was still looking at his footwork when we scored. He was incredible, Cooks. He is just getting better and better. And the weirdest thing was, at the beginning of the season, we felt like he wasn't sort of on fire, yet he was still assisting and scoring. Now, I mean, I've argued for 3 years that he's world-class with non-Arsenal fans. They laugh at me. I've argued and argued. And world-class is an opinion. Okay, it doesn't matter what anyone is. If you think someone's world class, you do. But then you look at Foden yesterday against United, another outstanding young player. Them two are just phenomenal. And they're only going to get better because they're so young. We're very, very lucky to have Saka. And so, I don't know if anyone saw this, but on social media, someone put a picture of Saka in the dugout, absolutely with the ump on his face, like fuming that he was sitting there. And someone said, now you know why he doesn't get substituted, because he literally lives to play. And I mean, I don't even know. I've gone for Ødegaard as my man of the match. I'm arguing with JJ on Twitter. He's gone for Havertz. I mean, I think the break in Dubai, there must have been something in the water. Because since then, maybe there was some unity needed. Oh, and I felt there was always together. But the cohesion, Kirks and Mervyn, it is just incredible. We are now expecting 5:30 Saturday night, I'm assuming we'll all be at the Emirates, that the minute that whistle goes, they're off. There'll be no sitting back. There'll be no side-to-side play. There'll be no, like, back to Raya. It'll be bang on goal. And Jesus comes on. All he wants to do is score. I'd love him to score. The tenacity of Jesus. I mean, we could go on all night. I haven't got all night. I'm going to love and leave you soon. But I just think, and Merv's right, I said to you this last year, you've got to enjoy the ride. I'm enjoying this much more. I do like being in third position in March with a point behind. I've said it all along. I don't want to be top. Last year, there's so much pressure on us. There's no pressure because really no one believes we're going to do it. It's only City and Liverpool. That's all everyone's talking about. Because remember, there's a lot of bias on TV towards those two anyway. And no one believes we're going to do this. And I tell you something, I've got more faith now than I ever have. Now, I know people are going to say, well, you've played, you know, Sheffield United, you've played Burnley. But other teams that we've come up against in past years, they would have been banana skins. It would have been 1-1, you know, and we were like, oh my God, how have we only got 1-1? City would have got 6. And here we are, we're doing what we think other teams do. We never killed teams off.
But it's funny you say that, Amanda, because Liverpool, City, they're not really doing that this season, or at least they're not at the minute. I mean, I've not noticed them putting 6, 5, even 4 past teams. I mean, I know Liverpool have done it, but I feel like we're the team that are just being as ruthless as anyone at the minute.
I just wanted to put out what Delta source. Hi, Delta. Look at the comparative results. City only beat them 1-2.
So in the last minute as well. The last minute of the game, they won that.
But someone actually said that what City are doing this year is what we did last year. You know, but you win leagues by playing badly and winning. At the moment, we're playing wonderful and winning. And yes, of course, you know, we've got Brentford, and as we know, Ramsdale's back on Saturday, which it could possibly be the last game we see him. Who knows? Chelsea's been, you know, then we got Porto. God, what a night that's going to be against Porto. But then we were going to play Chelsea, and now we're not playing them. So I don't know if this is a good thing, and maybe if Martinelli has taken a kick to have that postponed. But, you know, as I said to Carl tonight, we're not going to go to the Etihad and get 6 goals. We're just not. So our goal difference is 10 more than City. It is March the 4th, and I'm telling you, our goal difference is 10 more. Can you even believe I'm even saying that?
No.
You know, we've got to keep scoring. You never know. You never know. As my father says at every game of the first game of the season, goal difference matters.
Yeah, I'm still very hesitant that we'll win the league, and I'm not going to jump into the camp of saying that we're going to go all the way and do it. But
no, but we've got a good chance.
Let me finish. I was going to say it would be such a shame if we didn't, because we are playing the most extraordinary football at the minute. But I mean, let's just take each game as it comes, enjoy this ride that we're on. And
can I just say something, Cooks? Right, I was thinking this before. If we didn't support Arsenal, okay, and we were like, say, I don't know, Burnley fans, yeah? And you look at Liverpool, City and Arsenal. You've got Liverpool, well, it's Liverpool in it. They used to win a lot. You've got City who just, to be fair, and I'm going to say this, buy everything. Why do you not, as a neutral, want Arsenal to win? But neutrals don't want us to win. It's so bizarre in my head that if it was me and I supported another team, I'd want the team that didn't spend that amount of money, the team with a sort of newish manager and a young team, to come on that pitch, win every game and take the league. I get bored with the City and the Liverpool thing, but they don't. And I suppose that's down to a lot of social media and the way our fans are. And to be honest, all fans are the same. All football fans are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the reason why they don't want us to win is because we've got that bit of history, haven't we? You know, we've got those rivalries with the likes of City, with City, with United, with Liverpool, you know, with so many teams across the division that I think so many people are are numb almost if City win the league, because there's just no rivalry with them whatsoever.
Surely United fans want us to win the league. Surely. They hate Liverpool. They hate City. They do not hate us as much. We may be third.
You'd think so. But look, let's not get
the lesser of the two evils.
Let's not get caught on a massive tangent. We could talk about that on entirely separate podcasts. But Merv, one player I want to talk about this evening who I thought was instrumental in the game and was really quite important in all of the games that we've won by such hefty margins in recent weeks, starting as a number nine in back-to-back games for the first time this season, super Kai Havertz, absolutely fantastic tonight. And I just want to highlight something that Sky Sports said at halftime, which really, really irked me. I'm not entirely sure the name of the bloke who said it. It was the kind of lead presenter on Sky. Came out with some of the fringe players like Kai Havertz to step up here. And that really wound me up, because Kai Havertz, okay, he's not had the rub of the green all season. He certainly is at the minute, but he's played, I'm pretty sure, in every single match for Arsenal across all competitions, whether that be starting, whether that be coming off the bench. He is by no means whatsoever a fringe player. I'd go as far as saying he's one of the most important players in his Arsenal side.
He's becoming that way. I think I was on an episode, was it with you, a few weeks ago, when I said that I sit, one of the guys I sit with must be, you know, the biggest anti Kai Havertz person in the ground. I try very hard to convince a couple of the people that I sit with every week what his role is. And there's lots of great analysis about it. The Athletic did a great thing this morning about what he's brought to the Arsenal team and why he's so important. I think the kind of role we're giving him, which is this rotating he does between kind of left side midfield and then the central striker, people don't really get that. I think people are used to old-fashioned number nines who play like number nines, and he's not one of them. And they're looking for traditional midfield players who get the ball, beat a few, but he does very different things. And he pulls defenders out of position. He did it against Liverpool. They didn't know what to do with him. Who tracks him, because he shifts from left side midfield to playing central striker, and those are different players to mark him. So he's very good at escaping markers, at finding space for himself, and he seems to be certainly picking up steam now in terms of creating goals or creating opportunities. And it might not be the final pass, but it might be the pass that sets the final pass up for the goal. He's a lot more mobile than maybe the beginning of the season, where he probably wasn't 100% sure of his role as well. He definitely, to me, like you said, is part of the team now and a very vital part of the team. I expected him to start tonight. I expect him to start next week. Jesus, if he's back and he starts, then obviously he might play in the midfield, or it might be that he comes off the bench. But he's very much part of that. And I agree with you. I think he's a major reason why we're on this run at the moment, because he's been involved in everything.
Yeah, and I'm quite relaxed about whether he starts up top, whether he starts in midfield, because the thing for me is that he didn't have at the start of the season is the understanding of the players around him. And I think now he's got that, whether he's starting left eight, whether he's starting up top, whether he's even starting in the right eight position, he's just got such good link-up play with his teammates that it just is seamless. That's the best word I can use to describe it. He slots in, you know, like a glove. He's absolutely perfect for this Arsenal team. And when you look at how disjointed and clunky he was at Chelsea, he's a completely different player. And the way he took that goal, and he got an assist tonight as well. I mean, he's just a man that is oozing confidence. He's got 10 goal contributions this season in terms of goals and assists. I think we'd have been very happy with that return when we signed him initially, given that he was so out of sorts at Chelsea. But yeah, so pleased for him. And just altering the direction of the conversation slightly, Amanda, positive news for Saka and Martinelli. Saka came off at halftime due to feeling unwell. I have to say that was a very good first half performance if he was feeling a bit under the weather. And Martinelli, just a cut. I mean, cool. It must be a bad cut to see him go off like that, but that's a big relief, isn't it?
Massive relief. And if Saka's, you know, feeling sick and there is quite a big sickness virus going around at the moment, imagine playing like that and having sickness. I'm going to have to go, Cookie, I'm afraid. So I just want to say thank you to everyone for in the chat room. We're going live Mother's Day, 10 a.m. So after our Brentford experience Saturday night at the Emirates, thank you for letting me come on, Cooks, for 10 minutes just to say hello. It's wonderful. Enjoy it. Take the mickey out of all your workmates tomorrow when you go in the support any other team, because they're all going to go, it was only Sheffield United. Just say, yeah. 31 goals in 7 games, I think, or I think I've lost count. 30 goals in 7 games, whatever it is.
Remember, emptying stadiums everywhere we go.
Everywhere we go. So I'm going to say goodnight, everybody.
See you later, Amanda. Thank you for jumping on.
See ya.
Oh, sorry, I can't stay longer. It's lovely. Bye.
That's all right. Don't worry. See you later. Bye bye.
Right.
And that probably leads me into a good time to mention that we are sponsored by the wonderful Roof Beck Art. Thank you ever so much, Roof. As always, I say it every time, but thank you so much for sponsoring the show. To anyone watching, listening, please do check out Roof's stuff on Etsy. You can follow her on Twitter. You can get some absolutely wonderful pieces of memorabilia. Her stuff is absolutely fantastic. And yeah, we couldn't be happier to have her as part of the show. But back to the football. Interesting question here from Wookie Cookie. If Martinelli doesn't start against Brentford, which, you know, given that he has got a cut, there is a very real possibility that Arteta might not want to take the risk. If he isn't to start that game, who would you be looking to play on the left wing, Merv?
Interesting question. And it's been made interesting because obviously, touch wood, Gabriel Jesus is back now. And a great cameo in the second half, I thought. He looked up for it, hungry. And obviously, we have used him as a bit of a left winger before. I suppose my initial thought would have been Trossard. But we seem to be using Trossard slightly differently now as well. So it's it could well be Jesus keeping Havertz in that floating middle role. The two of them possibly kind of changing positions to keep the Brentford defence on their toes. So I think I wouldn't surprise me if that's what he did. But it wouldn't surprise me if he started Trossard there as well. I mean, the fact we've got these options, I think is important. You know, it's kind of, it's we need them because, you know, it would be great. Hopefully, touch wood, please God, everybody is fit between now and the end of May. The 1st of June at Wembley. And I mean, we do have options. God forbid something happened to Bakayo. I'm not 100% sure who could hold that position down for a series of games as effectively as he does. But he seems... he seems invincible, but I won't say that because he had to go off at half time tonight. But I suppose, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he put Gabriel Jesus out onto the left wing.
Yeah, and I think even if Martinelli was to be deemed fit for that game against Brentford, which touch wood he is, I think there's a good case to be starting Jesus anyway, because he's coming back from injury, playing on that left wing. I really like the idea of him interchanging with Kai Havertz. I don't see that as being something that couldn't necessarily work. And given that we've got that game against Porto on the horizon, which I'm almost certain Arteta will want to start Jesus in, given his record in the Champions League, that could be a really nice way of reintegrating him into the side. But Merv, going back to the Sheffield United game before we look ahead to Brentford, I think a lot of people were a bit, I don't want to say disappointed with the second half, but a little bit underwhelmed perhaps that we didn't go for more. And that sounds incredibly greedy when we've just won a game away from home by 6-0 in the Premier League. But I can kind of understand their frustrations in the first half was so ruthless, scoring goals at will, basically every player is getting on the score sheet. Second half, there was a drop-off, a quite significant one. And I don't think that's for lack of trying or anything like that. I think it was the case of we made so many substitutions that naturally that's going to impact the way in which you play. I mean, already taking off Bukayo Saka for Fabio Vieira had an enormous impact, you know, right off the bat. We still managed to score one goal through Ben White, brilliant goal that it was. But then we saw the introduction of Jesus, of Partey, of Cedric Suarez. I mean, they're definitely not all bad players to bring on. You know, I'm not going to go into the Cedric debate there, but when you're 5-6 up, you can afford to bring these guys on. But given that these are players coming back from injury, I mean, Vieira, Jesus and Partey in particular have barely played. I mean, they've not played any football in recent weeks. In some of them recent, well, in Vieira and Jesus's case, they've not played in a long, long time. So I'm not going to say were you worried, but were you a little bit disappointed that we didn't go for more in that second half?
Yes and no. Yes, because I think it would have been a great statement to have won 8-0, say. It would have put down a real marker against, for City and Liverpool. Having said that, we'd already scored 5 in the first half. So it was kind of obviously going to, I'm glad you highlighted that comic because I've seen it.
It's
on
fantastic,
the side,
isn't it?
And I didn't want to lose it.
For those listening on audio, yeah. Let's just highlight that comment from Karen Russell. Someone just tweeted, and I love this: Arsenal ladies fill stadiums and men empty them. Couldn't be more true, Karen. Sorry, Murph.
I mean, when I was young, if Arsenal was 3-0 up at half time, I wanted them to win 6-7-8. And of course, they never did. It usually ended up 3-1 or something. So I'm used over the years to knowing that if you're 5-0 up at half time, it doesn't mean you're going to win 10-0. You might end up winning 5-0 or 5-1. You might end up winning 6. You know, I wasn't disappointed because I didn't expect us to keep playing at that level with that intensity in the second half. And I knew that he would probably rotate a bit because he's got players coming back from injury. In some respects, it would have been nice to get another 2 or 3 because it puts a real marker down for the next few teams we play. Having said that, we can't be flat track bullies and humiliate the weakest teams and then not turn up against the big teams. So I think we played well, we kept our shape. We kept recycling possession really, really well against a team who were very demoralised. And I'm very happy with what I saw tonight.
And let's talk about some of those guys that did come on, because we have got some key men coming back from injury now, which is really, really good to see. The first one I want to talk about who played the lion's share of the second half, Fabio Vieira coming on at halftime on the right wing for Bukayo Saka. Thought that was interesting because we all know that's not really his position. And he is very much a stopgap when we need someone there. You know, I think it says a lot that he didn't opt to bring on Reece Nelson in that instance. I think his time at Arsenal is really, really dwindling. But for Fabio Vieira to come on, I thought he was, given that he's coming back from a long-term injury, I certainly didn't think he was bad. I don't think he made a statement on the game in any way. But there was one moment where he made a great run down that right-hand side, put a ball into the box, and on another day, Martinelli puts that into the back of the net. But what did you make of Fabio's second half?
I've got to throw my hands up here because if anybody listening remembers the summer one in, one out, one bangs, they'll know that the episode I was on, Fabio was my one out. I just felt that we hadn't, for what we paid, we weren't really kind of seeing what we ought to. Having said that, I've rode back on that this season. The few times I've seen him, I can see a lot more to what he does. Having said that, I think it's important he gets game time because he's a fringe player, albeit he's a £40 million fringe player, and he probably needs confidence. But again, you're right; he wasn't really playing in his strongest position. But you know, he coming into a game like that where the game is won, and I know you shouldn't ever say that in the Premier League, but when you're 5-0 up at half time against the bottom team, it's the game's over. And so it gave him a chance to do different things, to play in a slightly different role and show a different side. I don't know. I think that he might be one of those players who's in and out for the next season or two, and then possibly we move on. I'm not 100% sure that he's going to be leading the midfield or he's going to be a key player for Arsenal over the next 5 years. I don't know why. Maybe I've not seen him used, you know, in his strongest position for a run of games for some time. But he doesn't have the intensity maybe that we're used to seeing from other players. When you look at the way the midfielders like Declan Rice, Jorginho, Martin Odegaard, the way they ping them all around to each other, and he doesn't seem to fit into that midfield group.
I think for me, it's physicality more than anything. And I thought that was, again, quite stark and evident in his game this season. Just the sheer size of him and how slender he is. And when you look at how physical we are as a team now, it's hard for us to integrate these sort of players in because they're just not at the level of someone like Havertz, like Declan Rice, even as Jorginho. These guys are all quite physical. And it sounds weird saying that about Jorginho, but just look at how combative he is, how much he offers from a defensive point of view. You don't really associate that with Fabio Vieira. I still think there's a place for him in this Arsenal team, but it's finding that place that I think is going to be really, really tough. But one player I was really pleased to see come back tonight, and judging by the smile on his face when he came on, Thomas Partey, he could be so big for us in these final few months of the season, Merv. I mean, if we could keep him fit for March, April and May, I mean, that'd be absolutely massive. Came on, I thought he had some very good moments, some very bad moments as well, where he gave the ball away. To be expected, he's not played football in 5 months. But to have him back, it's just glorious, isn't it?
Yeah, we need the strongest squad. And he's an important player. And it's been quite concerning the length of time he's been out. Again, there's obviously a lot of rumours online that he might be moved on at the end of the season. I think that there is a role for him playing with Declan Rice in the middle there, as a springboard. Declan Rice can go further forward. Once or twice he was a little bit casual. It's like, you know, it's kind of like, we don't play like that anymore. You know, it's kind of,
I mean,
that's how we were playing at the end of last season, but you've missed it since then.
Well that's the thing. That's exactly it. I was watching Partey today and I was thinking, you're coming into a completely different team to the one that you left.
Yeah.
Like, so much has changed at Arsenal. The way we've evolved since he was playing at right back at the start of the season. I mean, we've now got Kai Havertz leading the line. We've got a rejuvenated midfield with Jorginho and Declan Rice pulling the strings. We've got Kivior at left back. I mean, it's very much evolved. And I think that's something that Partey might have to get used to. And as good as we know he can be, based on Jorginho's performance once again tonight, and given how well he plays with Declan Rice, and given that because of Declan Rice's introduction to the team, it's now enabling Jorginho to be that really good instrumental dictator in the middle of the pitch. I don't think it's as cut and dry as Partey just walks back into the side. I think there are certain games where you'll want his physicality, but I'm loving Jorginho at the minute. And there's nothing that this kind of going to sway my mind. But like you said before, to have these options is absolutely fantastic. One player I was a little bit disappointed didn't get a single minute tonight was Emil Smith Rowe. I would have thought this was the perfect game for him at 5-6-0 to bring him on to show what he can do. I thought he would have been one of the very first substitutions to have got at least half an hour. And when you're seeing the likes of Cedric Suarez coming on, you think surely Smith Rowe is going to get some minutes, but it wasn't to be, was it?
No, that was disappointing that he didn't get on. I think that it would have been nice to see him. I mean, you mentioned earlier, or was it Amanda, Reece Nelson? Again, that was a slight surprise not to give him a few minutes, particularly with Bukayo Saka going off. But having said that, he obviously wanted to put Fabio Vieira there and give him some game time. But no, it was a shame. It would have been nice to see Emil Smith Rowe on. There's a lot of love for him in the fan base. You know, he's one of our own. He's people want to see him do well. And before his injuries, you know, we think back to the beginning of the previous season where, yeah, he was doing really well. We think that game against Spurs a couple of years ago. I don't know what's going on there, whether or not the way we're evolving tactically, and Mikel is a very deep thinker about these things. Maybe he's not fitting into what Mikel wants from that left side. Don't forget, he sees it in training. They do practice matches and stuff. Maybe he's doesn't feel he can use him in the way that he wants somebody to be in that position, so he has to find another position to bring him in. I don't know. Or maybe it's just he's trying to manage minutes for everybody, keeping the core together as much as possible, and just using different players at different times in different games to make sure to keep them, I suppose, as part of the group. I don't know. And I'm not sure if they asked Mikel that question in the press thing afterwards. He'd give a straight answer. He'd probably say everybody's important and everybody gets time or something. But it is a shame. He's an Arsenal boy and we want him to do well. And, you know, Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, that was the song. They were coming through the ranks together. And it's, I know he's had a couple of injuries, obviously. But it doesn't look like, at the moment, it doesn't feel like he's going to be with us long term.
Yeah, and on that note, I'm going to ask you a pretty ruthless question with regards to some of our Highlanders, because Smith Rowe, Eddie Nketiah and Reece Nelson have been three of the names that have been mentioned as guys that are likely or possibly going to be leaving the club in the summer. I think it's, dare I say, inevitable for Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah that they'll leave, and I don't have any issue with that. I think they're two players that we could make a bit of money on. It'll be pure profit as they're Highlanders, but the one that the jury is really out on is Emil Smith Rowe. I think if a good offer came in, I definitely can see the club accepting that. I'm talking 40 million plus. And for a guy that's not played in two seasons, hasn't scored a goal in God knows how long, I think the club would probably have to look at accepting a bid like that if it was to come in, which is so frustrating. But I think moments like tonight are pretty telling in that he didn't get on the pitch. He wasn't given that opportunity to show what he can do. And it's really frustrating. It's, you know, I might be speaking out my backside here, because we did also see Cedric Suarez come on and we know that he's not got a future at Arsenal. But this was a prime opportunity for Smith Rowe. But maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe I've misjudged it and we might see him start against Brentford. I mean, that's a very real possibility. But you'd think he's not going to start against Porto. He's not going to start against Manchester City. And then you look at our games remaining until the end of the season. Do you see him starting any of those? I mean, they're going to be so important at that point. I don't think you do.
Well, we don't know about injuries. So please God, there are no injuries between now and the end of the season. But you know, there might be, and players might need a rest and stuff. So I suppose you can never say never.
Absolutely.
It doesn't, you know, he hasn't come off the bench much, I think twice. And one of them wasn't for long at all. Since the beginning of the year. So
he came on against Newcastle. I thought he looked good then, and was very unfortunate not to score if it wasn't for a Dan Burn block. So that's why I was surprised that he didn't get on tonight, because he has been coming on recently. So it was a bit of a shock for me.
Unless it was because he wanted Thomas Partey to get on and get some minutes, and therefore the makeup of the midfield was going to be different. Mikel really thinks these things through, so it's I wouldn't want to question him, but it would be a shame if we let him go and he went for 45 million, say, to a West Ham or something, because I could see him getting game time, regular game time at another club and becoming, you know, a leading Premier League midfielder.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, fingers crossed, touch wood, I'm reading into the situation too much and Mikel's resting him for the game against Brentford. And who knows, maybe we see him start that one from the off. But just before I let you go, Murph, interesting comment here from Avon. The bench looked pretty good tonight. It most certainly did, the strongest I've seen the bench in God knows how long. It makes you wonder who won't make the matchday squad once Timber Zinchenko and Tomiyasu are back. Now, obviously, we didn't see Zinchenko and Tomiyasu back. They were, as we understand, on the verge of making the squad, but I think it makes complete sense to give them a bit more time, get them back for Brentford, get them in the squad for Porto, where you're allowed more substitutes. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because you look at the bench tonight and they're all first teamers. I think you can pretty safely assume that Cedric would go. But then you're probably looking at the likes of Nketiah, Nelson, you know, the unfavoured substitutions, really, as the guys that are going to slip down that pecking order.
I would have thought so. Yeah, I mean, it's we're I'm guessing that it looks pretty certain we're going to be in for a striker in the summer, because that's all I hear. So it's all anybody writes about. So it's and I think we probably need that now. So I can see Eddie obviously moving. Be a shame if it's Emil Smith Rowe. I don't know about the. I saw a comment go through earlier that was Cedric. Is Cedric coming off the bench because Tomiyasu is a bit further away than we're being led to believe? So I don't know about that. But it's the squad. You know, the first team at the moment is effectively picking itself. And it's the, I suppose it's outside of the 14, shall we say, players coming back from injury, players coming back into fitness and stuff, who will be there next season. I'm guessing, well, because once Timber is back, fingers crossed, I know we only really saw him for a game and a bit, but I saw enough in the Charity Shield to think he's going to be a major player for us. And so that would obviously put Kiwior as cover and Tommy as cover. So I don't know. But again, we might not see the best of him because of the injury he had. Even if he gets game time in 2 or 3 weeks, we might not really see him as a regular starter until next season. So I think it will be interesting to see what we do in the summer, and that will dictate how people move. But yeah, it's kind of that we will have a very strong group. And I wonder if, particularly the way Kiwior's played in the last few games, and once Timber is back fit, if we keep Zinchenko in the summer, I don't know. To me, he plays a very important part. But if we're going to keep Partey, or we're being linked with players like Douglas Luiz at Aston Villa, Anana at Everton, maybe Zinchenko might be one to move on. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's certainly a question for the summer. I mean, there's so much to ponder there. And I mean, I think we should just be grateful that going into the last few months of the season, touch wood, there's no problems with Martinelli. Saka is nothing more than being ill, and we can have a very fully fit squad going into that City game. I mean, that's my focus, to have Tomiyasu, Zinchenko back for that game. I think it's quite probable that we might see those guys rested. You know, if they're not on the bench against Brentford, we might just see them given a couple more weeks off whilst we have got, you know, the Chelsea game postponed. We've got the international break. Just let them fully recover, get into training and have them available for City. Would, of course, be great if we could get them back for Porto. But I think the way we've dealt with, say, Partey, for example, whilst we know he's been back for maybe a fortnight, just to ease him in to prevent a reoccurrence of the injury. But it's great to have options, Merv. It was a great win for us tonight.
Yeah, it's a great little run at the moment. Long may it continue.
Fantastic. And just before I let you go, score prediction for Brentford.
Well, I was going to say 3-1. I don't know why, but then I don't want it to be a 1. I want it to be 3-0. I think we'll win. I think that it's obviously going to be emotional because Aaron Ramsdale will play. But I was talking to a non-Arsenal fan last week about the goalkeeping thing. And I said, look, ever since the start of the season, I've been thinking, you know, feeling that I don't know why we've done this. You know, I was happy with Ramsdale. He had a great connection with the fans. And yes, you know, he was a bit exuberant and stuff, but he did some great things. But I think I've come round over the last few weeks to seeing why it was done. But I think it'll be quite emotional to see him, because probably it's the last time, unless Ray unfortunately gets injured, we probably won't see him again in an Arsenal shirt. So I think that will be good. And I think he'll probably keep, assuming everybody's fit, who went off today. I don't think he's going to change it too much.
No, I think it will be.
I think 3-1, I have a funny feeling Tony is going to want to try and prove a point against us. So it wouldn't surprise me if he'll be quite physical. It'd be a very different kind of problem for Saliba and Gabriel. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets one, because obviously he's been linked with us and everything. But I think 3-1, comfortable.
And I'm going to fall into the trap of being overly confident, and I'm going to go for 4-0. Brentford have got pretty much their entire back four injured. So I think there's no excuses for us not to be winning this game and winning it comfortably. And yeah, I fancy Tony to do absolutely nothing in this one. So I'm being cocky, being confident, and I'm hoping.
No, you might be right. You might.
I hope so.
Well, I'm hoping for a 6-0 Arsenal win, but yeah.
Come on now, Merv. Let's not be greedy. So last point of call, mate, where can people find you across the social medias?
You can find me at Mervyn Dinnan, MERVYNDINNEN. It's my name. No one else has it. Funnily enough, there isn't another one that I'm aware of. And the same on LinkedIn. And I'm on X and Threads. And other than that, I don't know. I pop up in odd places.
That sounds pretty suspect.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean it like that. I mean, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, I get involved in conversations on kind of, you know, mainly on X and LinkedIn about the world of work.
Fantastic. Make sure you give Mervyn a follow, and please do be sure to subscribe to the Same Old Arsenal podcast on YouTube. Give us a like if you've enjoyed the podcast as well. Make sure to follow us on all the various audio platforms, wherever you get your podcasts, whether it be Apple, Amazon, Spotify, wherever it may be. Give us a rating. If you enjoy the show, make sure you keep coming back for more. From myself, from the wonderful Mervyn, thank you ever so much to Arsenal for a beautiful performance this evening. Long may it continue. On to Brentford we go. See you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.